next item, Mr. Robinson?
Okay, so I'm proposing now that we move to the item number seven, the recycled water production and use in the Central Coast region. And if I can, first I'll provide kind of a general comment of agendas and how we build them and how they're changing a little bit here. You may have noticed that over the last few meetings, we shifted our focus in the agenda to include a number of informational and policy topics, such as our recent discussion of constituents of emerging concern and today's topic, recycled water. My goal through this shift is to engage the board in specific strategic discussions regarding the direction of our agency. The natural outgrowth of these discussions will be directions from board to staff. That's what I anticipate. That will assist in defining our path forward. In addition, I anticipate there will also be action items or assignments for board members consistent with the discussion at WQCC about engagement, board member engagement, as well as assignments for myself and for staff. Today's topic, recycled water, is really the centerpiece strategy for Central Coast communities in search of drought durable, diversified water portfolios. During our January discussion of the City of Santa Barbara's efforts towards desal, we learned about the importance of water source diversification as an effective counter strategy for recurring droughts. Our Central Coast has neither abundant surface water nor available snowpack to rely on for components in our water portfolio. And because of these limitations, we're exceptionally dependent on our groundwater basins. And we have to take every opportunity to recycle water back into those basins to the maximum extent we can. So focusing on recycled water means different things. We realize this, as Harvey prepared this item, we realize there's a lot of, you know, if I say recycled water, I'm thinking of one thing. If you say recycled water, Dr. Hunter brought this to our attention, she may be thinking, or you may be thinking, of something slightly different, and it's good to raise that to our awareness. For example, I think when we think of recycled water, we think of purple pipes, and we think of like the Castroville Seawater Intrusion Project, or the purple pipes that feed our parks, you know, the water they need. Others think of recycled water, including drinking water projects like Pure Water Monterey, you know, that are coupled up with drinking water. Pure Water Monterey or Cambria. But we also include oftentimes disposal, where a wastewater treatment plant may be disposing to percolation ponds like Santa Maria or the new Los Osos plant. It's another component of the larger recycled concept. Yet another option here, maybe in our future, is direct potable reuse. And then another piece that we really haven't talked much about, although I heard it alluded to in the board member report, is the use of capturing clean rural stormwater flows and engineering infiltration back into the basins associated with that. And our hope is actually to have that be our next discussion topic at the July meeting. And I was taking notes of comments, Andy Fisher, to enrich that discussion. So the purpose of today's discussion is to better understand what recycled opportunities look like, what might be keeping communities from investing in recycled water, and to explore how collectively we can maximize the use of water throughout the region. I'm going to turn it over to Harvey Packard, who will now initiate our discussion with a presentation. And I want to remind the board that as with other informational items, this is intended to be a dialogue. So do not hesitate as we go through the presentation to initiate that dialogue or issue questions or comments.
Thank you, John. This is Harvey Packard, and as Mr. Robertson said, I'll be talking about recycled water. And again, let's make it a discussion. Feel free to interrupt me with questions or comments or suggestions or whatever is appropriate. So John brought up the idea of what we think of when we talk about recycled water. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that first. Is it gray water? Here's a graphic I found of a laundry gray water system. You might think of this as recycled water. In the staff report, you may have read that the staff report focuses solely on municipal domestic wastewater recycling, which is, as a regulatory agency, what I think of when I talk about recycled water. But I wanted to throw in some of these other examples also.
Can you go back to that?
Yep.
We're talking mainly homes, right? When you're talking, this describes it.
Right.
I think it's important that you say that there's everything that you see is 2 inches below the ground. And then the question I have is that comment says end of main 1-inch line should be fully open with no plug or valve. Is that above the surface?
No, it's below surface. What this is a description of is a type of system that the state now allows without any permitting. So it's legal to put this system in without any typically local, or any state permitting, as long as there's one, no storage, which means those valves have to be open all the time, and it's buried beneath the soil or mulch. So if you meet those conditions and a few others, you can hook this up yourself without any additional permitting from the government. So they're encouraging these types of systems. If you involve pumps or storage, then you need a plumbing permit from the city usually.
And that was also done to facilitate through the Uniform Building Code,
right,
the ability for cities to allow this type of installation, because if it was prohibited by the state, de facto,
right,
it would be prohibited in cities, so it opened the door.
Right, so this is an update to the state plumbing code.
And a similar question. You use a washing machine here. Is it just as legal to do the same thing with kitchen, bathroom, sinks, and showers?
I'm not positive. I know the plumbing code talks specifically about washing machines. And the beauty of a washing machine, it has a pump in it. So it'll pump that water out to your garden. Typically, you're using those other non-black water fixtures in your home, you'd have to have a way to pump it. So that probably would require a permit.
So you think of a washing machine is defined as gray water, and a shower and a kitchen sink, for example, are defined as black water?
No, those are gray water.
Okay, you mentioned the term black water.
Black water, those non-black water sources is what I meant to say. So anything but your toilet, your kitchen, food disposal, and I believe those are the two main ones. You can't ever hook up to gray water. And a washing machine technically has to have a diverter in case you're washing things that may have higher bacteria counts, like diapers or something like that.
So at my house, when we use bleach, which we don't want to go into our landscaping, we close the valve.
Right.
You said earlier that the valves have to always be open.
The valves at the end of the pipes have to be open.
Yes. Thank you.
John brought up manage aquifer recharge. Here's a couple pictures of wintertime flooding of dormant orchards. Actually, those walnuts don't look very dormant to me. But this is another option of using stormwater or excess high winter flows to get some groundwater recharge.
In fact, tomorrow, the county of San Luis Obispo Farm Bureau is sponsoring a agriculture stormwater capturing groundwater recharge workshop, which will include representation from the county, Water Resource Division, and VRCDs of the county, UC Cooperative Extension Farm Advisor, and it's going to cover exactly this type of topic.
Yeah.
Can you address the potential for water damage to high-value crops?
Kind of. I'm not an expert on this, but that's the topic of a lot of research right now. What crops are able to take these kinds of flows? Almonds and walnuts, they think, will do pretty well. Grapes probably will do pretty well in most cases.
Not probably, it will be.
Yeah.
And the difference is when the tree is dormant.
Right.
That's the key. And generally speaking, when we do have these upper opportunity of stormwater capturing in winter months when the permanent crop is dormant.
There's apparently been some experimentation in the Central Valley on grapes. I'm not sure if they're table or wine that have that seem to indicate that they could keep water on the vineyard on into July without a negative impact.
Mm-hmm. Including I saw some research, a recent article about a farmer down in the Kings River in Fresno County, maybe putting it on his orchard's excess water. High river flows this year from the Kings River.
There is a wine grape grower that I know very well here in Piedmont Valley has been using this practice for the last 17 years, and his 40 years old vines are dry farmed and doing very well.
Do you want to add something?
No, except to say that the Central Valley Water Board has been looking at those projects. Of particular interest to us is the effect that might have on the movement of nitrates in the soil. So though there's been a few pilot projects that have been approved, specifically this last year, there's a few in the King's Coalition and a couple. The boards generally require some monitoring to understand what's happening with the dynamics of salt and nitrates in the soil as increased flooding happens. But it's very, very promising. As you mentioned, grapes have shown a lot more promise than we had originally thought.
And, you know, for full disclosure, the vineyard that I know very well happens to be mine. And one of the benefit also of applying these techniques is permanent crops, dry farming, no irrigation. You basically provide a deep soil profile, rehydration, and under normal years, non-5-year historical drought, you can actually dry farm this crop without watering.
Yeah.
Question for Peter. You mentioned in Central Valley, questions are regarding the nitrate and salt, other salts. When you flood, like in this picture, with river water, surplus river water, do you decrease? Is the thought that you'll be decreasing those salts, or you'll be potentially increasing?
Well, the dynamic really depends on the soil type, and of primary concern to the Central Valley Board, and it's sometimes different in I know the Central Coast Board is the amount of nitrate that and salts that we have in the Vado zone. We're very curious to see how much increased flooding, increased hydrologic head would have effects on domestic well users in the vicinity. We want to be careful that as we flood, we don't drive residual nitrates in the Vado zone towards domestic wells. But again, I think the results are coming back. We're taking a look at those numbers. And either way, I think it would manage appropriately, it would have enormous benefit to the overall nitrogen balance in these areas as you store that water, even if it does pick up a bit of nitrate, and then you reuse that water on the crops, utilizing that nitrate source that the water has absorbed, limits the need for nitrate fertilizer when you're irrigating with that water. So again, complex system, but we're taking a close eye to it to help manage both nitrate loading and resiliency to drought impacts.
But again, I think you need to differentiate the type of permanent crops, because if you take certain crops such as citrus that do require a higher level of nitrogen application, and you compare and contrast it to wine grapes where you use very minimal amount of fertilizer, then you're only looking at the natural salts in the soil. And one of the big negative consequences of extensive drought is toxicity due to salts. And this, in fact, with until last year, this was very noticeable with a lot of permanent crops where the plant tissues exceeded their toxicity tolerance. So, you know, you gotta also look at which crop you're talking about.
Yeah. As Mr. Johnson mentioned, we're aware of what Santa Cruz County RCD is doing up there and some of the permitting issues, and these are exactly the types of issues we're gonna have to resolve when we talk about permitting these types of installations.
The other aspect too is when we talk about the flooding is the high flow capturing of nearby streams. Because when you talk about flooding, is it flooding because of rainfall, or is it because of flooding from a nearby creek? And then you're getting to water rights division issues and fish and wildlife on what the impact to, for example, steelhead habitat may be. And that's where you do require to have an in-stream, what's called high in-stream flow study to be performed. So like you said, it's, you know, there are multi-layers in this permitting process.
It's also an issue, I think you referenced the permitting issue. If you're doing recycling in agriculture, if you're doing recycling of either stormwater or irrigation runoff, and you're doing it through infiltration, then there's a pretty obvious potential for that to be carrying nitrates. And in our normal practice, we would require, if you have a collection pond for your runoff from your field, we would require that to have an impervious bottom. So this is, they're complicated questions for us.
Another type of system that's similar, and we actually have permitted these, are ASR wells, aquifer storage and recharge wells. There's one operating up in the Seaside Basin now. We'll take excess rivers from high flows in the Carmel River, bring it to a well, inject it for later removal by groundwater.
Harvey, how long has it been since the Seaside Aquifer project has been in place?
Ooh, I say coming up on 10 years. What would you say, Mayor?
I think around November. I think it's happened 10.
Yeah.
10 years.
And most of those years, it didn't do anything.
For the last 5 years, or three or four, they didn't have any high enough flows to get anything in.
But is there anything else we've learned from that project, because it's a pretty, as a project, it took a lot of, as Mayor Delgado knows, a lot of collaboration in the regional Monterey Bay area, which is a lot of discrete little communities and water systems.
I believe that it's been working well. It's successful. Yeah. John, Mr. Buckingham is here. If you want to swap.
Okay, so in deference to tight schedules that I had already mentioned, Dave, I was going to introduce. We've talked on the phone, we've never met in person. Recently, the Morro Bay City Council wrestled with the issue of the cost of recycled water as it pertains to their forthcoming new wastewater treatment plan. And it fit with what we were trying to talk about today, recycled water, and what a municipality struggles with as they try to make those decisions about tertiary treatment, recycled water, and accommodating inevitable rate increases. I thought it is a perfect opportunity to listen to Dave and what he's worked through with the city of Morro Bay, and talk about where our collective opportunities might exist to incentivize and assist municipalities in making great decisions about recycled water.
Great, thanks.
Welcome,
good morning.
Dave.
Thanks, John. Board members, thank you for being flexible in your schedule. I'm trying to run between a couple of things, and I really appreciate the opportunity to let me just say that John's call, I think Monday afternoon, evening, was very welcome in what I heard of an interest in regional teaming better with jurisdictions and with the board as we look at water in the on the Central Coast. So I really appreciate that. What we thought we'd do is, this is about a 7 or 8 slide presentation that that we actually have presented to Water Board of Sacramento, the financing folks. Took it to Washington in March and presented it to Senator Harris's office and our Fine Sons office. It's an overview of the Morro Bay project as it was conceived and going forward 2 weeks ago. And I'll give you an update on where we are as a town right now, as a city right now, with regard to the project, because the cost is substantial, and therefore the cost of ratepayers is substantial. So I'll just kick on with this, and maybe if you'd like to ask questions as we go through, or maybe save those sort of for the end, and we can have a further discussion. Bottom line is the city of Morro Bay is intending to replace a 62-year-old wastewater treatment plant that sits on a 26-acre site on the beach and dumps a million gallons of treated water a day into the ocean on an expiring 301H permit. The city, a number of years ago, took a serious and significant step to engage in managed retreat, to move that facility off the coast to a more sustainable location, and to work to achieve a full recycling component for the project. The current status is the facility master plan is complete, the master reclamation plan is complete. We are in the process of, the EIR will be complete in November, so and at that point we'll be able to sort of go full speed ahead with funding. Project benefits, the community, the city of Morro Bay has the opportunity to achieve water independence in this and to wean ourselves off of state water and offer our 1,300 acre feet of state water allocation to another more needful community. So we are working toward a one water future. In fact, two nights ago, the city council approved a contract to write a one water plan for the city of Morro Bay, not just on the wastewater treatment water reclamation, but for stormwater, for drinking water, and for the whole collection system. This is a measurable financial undertaking for a city of 10,500, moving that plant. But if you look on the slides, you'll see sort of in italics there in those bullets what this begins to address. It addresses climate change and sea level rise with a plant that's sitting literally on the beach. Addresses coastal flood and tsunami protection. Proposes complete IPR reclamation of 800 acre feet of water a year. That sub aquifer that I'll show you in a minute has nitrate contamination in it from agriculture upstream, and the introduction of 800 feet of acre water a year will tend to mitigate a little bit over time that nitrate contamination. We have ensured that seawater intrusion is addressed and will not happen. I'll talk about that a little more, and a couple other things that you can see there. So one purpose of this slide is to communicate all of the various areas of the last water bond and potential financing, perhaps another water bond and potential financing that this addresses, from contaminants to seawater intrusion to reclamation. So this slide is a little bit dated. It hasn't been updated since for 2 weeks ago, and I'll say that the city council right now is working through with the community the potential rate impacts of this project. And so there is, I think, still political will to execute a project like this over time, but there is a substantial level of concern in the community over the total cost of this project. And so I should mitigate that first bullet a little bit and say that that as is wonderful in our democracy, the politics of the local level, we're working through those things. I think I covered most of the other thing. Bottom line is we are just about ready. The EIR will be completed, should be certified in November, and then we'll be on track to complete the project. There's our existing wastewater treatment plant that I described. You'll notice it's carefully placed between our high school, our city park, and RV park in the city beach. 62 years ago, that was maybe a great place for a wastewater treatment plant, not so much anymore. It's got an expiring 301H waiver. I covered the other points there. Bottom line, as I said, the city and the community have made a commitment to move this facility off the beach there. And one of the opportunities is that's 26 acres future visitor serving beachfront land that the Coastal Commission is also excited to see, not committed to an industrial use, but committed to a visitor serving use. So managed retreat envisions moving. You see the wastewater treatment plant there in red. You see the new site in green on the bottom right. That is the South Bay Boulevard exit of Highway 1. There's no road. The South Bay Boulevard goes south off the square to Los Osos, and it doesn't go right up into that little bit of land up there. So the city is conducting managed retreat from the coast, mitigating climate change risk. The new site is 2.5 miles from the beach. It is under contract, 30 acres there. We don't intend to use 30 acres, but just the way we needed to work with the owner, we've got a 30-acre site under contract. It's 2,000 feet from the nearest residence, which was of significant interest as we were citing this over the last year and a half. The ranch land location preserves a viewshed. It will be viewable just in a passing glimpse if you look exactly right as you're driving north on Highway 1. But it's essentially 2,000 feet off of the highway. It's a $167 million project, fully scoped, with 10,000 residents. That's the challenge. As I said, the facility master plan is complete, and this shows a picture from the facility master plan, shows how the site will nest sort of up there, couple thousand feet off Highway 1. It is planned to be either an SBR or MBR facility with advanced treatment, microfiltration, RO, and UV disinfection. The facility master plan confirmed that it will produce 800 acre feet a year of reusable water. There's substantial solar opportunities up there that one of our project goals is energy recovery and at least partially powering the facility with renewable energy. This is sort of the exciting part. So our facility master plan was complete in December, November actually of last year. Our master water reclamation plan was complete in March. And so what you see in green there is really a sub-basin of the Moro Valley Aquifer. You see all the agricultural land there in the top right. And right at that point where the agricultural land, there's a little point there, there's actually a geological feature there we call the Narrows that forces both surface water and water under the surface through that Narrows, and then it opens up into this really a sub-aquifer that goes almost from the rock to Miner's Hardware and from the high school down to our Vets Hall, including the power plant site there. Our existing city wells are located within that aquifer. We've completed the master rec plan and the hydrology studies have confirmed that aquifer will accept 800 acre feet a year of groundwater injection. That injection will perhaps mitigate a little bit the high nitrate concerns. Perhaps more important, certainly the city, our modeling confirms that we can extract 1,200 acre feet a year from our existing wells in that sub aquifer with no seawater intrusion. The city currently has a 581 acre feet right to pump out of our city wells. And one thing we would be wanting to do is if we were injecting 800 acre feet into that aquifer to increase our pumping rate, so that the city could literally become water independent, nearly with a closed loop water system. So water independence is a key goal here, both a positive for the community and for the region. As I mentioned, we have a 1,300 acre foot state water allocation that we would be in position to be able to offer up. So our current requirement is about 1,150 acre feet. As I mentioned, we can pump 1,200 out of that aquifer, satisfying the city's requirement. Where we're to stay on schedule, and I'll just take a pause here. So this was originally conceived as a two-phase project. Phase one was going to be a reclamation-ready wastewater treatment plant at the new location, and then phase two was going to be the water recycling component to this. And we were working through that, and would that be ag in lieu? Would it be purple pipe? What would the recycling component be? As we identified this aquifer, that there's really a perfect setup for groundwater injection, IPR. We combined those two phases and said, we can do all this in 5 years instead of doing phase one in 5 years and phase two in the year 6 to 8. But that's part of the rub that I'll get to here in a second with cost. So we have the capacity to complete this project by June of 2021 as the full project, the full water reclamation facility. The engineering is there, and we're on a timeline to do that, which would allow the city to be water independent. We do have just on the city's water right now, as I mentioned, we are on state water, but we do have a desal plant. It's about 25 years old. It sits right down in that area as well. That desal plant has an emergency permit right now from Coastal, and that's where how we produce water when state water shuts down. So the timing, where we just stay on schedule right now, the EIR and Master Rec Plan will be complete in the end of this year. And Mike Nunley from MKM Associates just walked in. Mike is our project manager, or program manager, excuse me. And then we are intending for the design, build, construction to begin next, well, actually probably 2019 with design, build, RFPs going out next in 2018, and then construction in 2019-20, and to be complete in June of 2021. The funding we are planning for a state and or federal SRF type loans, and hopefully grants. So obviously the state SRF is a key source, as is potentially a WIFIA loan. And then on the grant side, state water grants and Bureau of Rec Water Smart grants at the federal level are what we are hopeful to help relieve the burden with. The loan is to be funded by sewer rate increases, or sewer and or water rate if there's a water recycling component. So that is the intention right now, is to fund the entire project through whatever is not grant funded through rate increases. So it's a huge project for a small community, but it is addressing some substantial issues. Expiring waiver, climate change, flood zone and tsunami zone both. Full IPR of 800 acre feet of water is pretty neat. And then, as I've mentioned before, returning 1,300 acre feet allocation to somebody in our water conservation district would be a great regional thing also. Talked about funding, I'm gonna skip sort over that, and I'll just go into the current status. So the council, as I alluded to a minute ago, is weighing options right now. At our council meeting 2 weeks ago, that was our council meeting after going through a number of advisory boards to present to the council the rate impact of the project. And have we stayed on the timeline we were on, we would have released a Prop 218 notice this week and had a Prop 218 public hearing in 6 weeks from now. The community and the council quite concerned about $167 million project for a 10,000 person community, as you can well imagine. Where are we to do the full Monty now? Water and combined water and sewer rates would approach $250 a month. And Morrovay is it's an interesting community in this perspective. And this is probably germane. First, we're over 10,000 people, just barely, which means we don't qualify for USDA or US kind of funding. And secondly, while the city, over 50% of the kids in our elementary school are on the free lunch program, you would think we were a disadvantaged community based on that, because there's also a reasonably high number of better off retirees up on the hill with a nice view. It's sort of a backwards bell curve, and we've got a bunch of folks at one end of the bell curve on the median income spectrum, and enough folks on the other end of the bell curve to not make us a disadvantaged community either. So that's it's a challenge. So what the council directed 2 weeks ago was to push the pause button, essentially, and to for the staff to assemble a team of local engineering experts and other experts, and we might find a couple in this room, to have that team look at the project. There's concern on the part of at least a vocal group in the community that the costs are high because of overpricing contractors, consultants. You can probably read into that, but that if we just didn't have consultants working this, that the cost would be much lower. And so that team is going to take a look at the project as it's conceived, and then the council would like to see two additional options. Both of them, essentially, these two options say, don't do phase two now, but separate phase one and phase two. Focus on phase one, a wastewater treatment plant at that South Bay Boulevard site now. But in both cases, be ready to do phase two, the full reclamation, at some time in the future, probably in the 5 to 10 year range. So what they asked, the two options they asked for is, one, to consider, you know, should probably start with the last bullet. The first thing they said is, consider tertiary treatment at the South Bay Boulevard site without the phase two water recycling component. And that would almost certainly be the MVR plant that was scoped out in our facility master plan. And that would be reclamation ready. That was always our sort of phase one. The master plan also looks at SBR with filtration. The other alternative they'd like to see is essentially the least expensive possible secondary option, also at the new site. Whether that's the SBR plant that's defined in the facility master plan without the filtration, or a Oxditch or some other approach, but they would like to have essentially the least cost option. I'll tell you quite frankly that even the least cost options are in the least cost option is probably in the $118 to $123 million range, which is still substantially more than most in the community are willing to stomach. Maybe not most in the community, but there is certainly grave concern of even a project of that scale, much less the full project of $167 million. And one of the challenges we have is not sure anybody on the California coast is conceiving of a brand new facility at a never used site, having to put in the pipe, the force mains and lift stations to get wastewater there, with both a wastewater treatment component and a complete water recycling component. That project, I just don't think has been built on the California coast yet. And so Morrovay, in one sense, is sort of on the leading edge of this managed retreat and water recycling, but those costs are substantial. All right, that concludes the presentation in 17 minutes. Happy to take any questions, and Mike is here. He's got all the technical side of it. I'm the pitch man.
Mr. Buckingham, we certainly appreciate your willingness on somewhat of a last minute to come to this meeting. But, you know, as I hear your presentation, you know, I had a flashback of attending city council meetings 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, along with County Board of Supervisor Mr. Bruce Gibson. And at the time, the discussions were regionalization of water treatment plants. And, you know, I certainly feel your pain when you emphasize the $167 million for 10,000 people. But I think there were, in this project, unintended consequences of the political landscape, I'm trying to say diplomatically, where, you know, the city of Morro Bay is pursuing this plant solo. You had neighbors, which is Cayucas, that at one time there was an interest to actually work jointly and have a joint plant, which would have reduced the cost per habitant. And in fact, at one time there was even, as you recall, a consideration of using the Mance Colony facility and using it as a regionalized plant for the Mance Colony, for Cayucas, and for Morro Bay. Now, you know, certainly I'm not here to debate or discuss, you know, decisions made locally, but unfortunately, I think there are cost consequences because anytime you do not leverage regionalizations, you mentioned the cost of consultants. Well, your cost of consultants get multiplied, your cost of permitting get multiplied, etc. So, you know, I understand the predicament you're in, and certainly, yeah, you know, that's a high dollar. But I wanted to mention this because I think in the fairness and the transparency of where the city is at today, you know, there were other options. At the time, the cost of those options, you know, not taking into account escalation costs, you know, really had some attraction. You know, it is what it is now. You know, can't turn the clock. But I, having attended some of those hearings myself, I felt compelled to, you know, share this to my colleagues.
Thank you. I remember that that meeting very well. Mm-hmm. And John's predecessor was there at that meeting. The working with the same diplomacy that you just used. So the city of Morro Bay has been trying to complete a wastewater treatment plant since 1993. And so the brief history is that's 15 years of trying to marshal the community and political will to address that substandard plan with a 301H waiver. About 2.5 years ago, at that fall of 2014 meeting that you just described, that was the conclusion of about a 6-month period in which the city, at the request of the Cayuga Sanitary District, so our existing plant is a shared wastewater treatment plant between Morro Bay and Cayugas, of which Cayucas has about 25% of the flows and Morro Bay the balance. That meeting was the conclusion of a 6-month study to at Cayucas's behest to examine the relative cost benefits primarily of building the new plant at the Men's Colony. The result of that study was it would be more expensive both in construction and in O&M over the years to have to build a new wastewater treatment plant or water reclamation facility at that site. So the city determined to build in the Morro Valley. Actually had already determined that, and it went through a 6-month pause in there to reevaluate at Cayucas' behest the Men's Colony option. But bottom line, that was gonna be more expensive. and the water reclamation opportunities might have been more challenging as well. Then and then a number of months later, Cayugas for a number of reasons chose to construct their own site, their own plant, which they are probably aware of moving forward in the Toro Valley, Toro Creek, and while generally there are financial benefits to larger projects and centralization, I think what we will see, there are also challenges with centralization when it comes to water reclamation and reuse, because better to have your wastewater treatment plant sitting in the middle of the aquifer where you want to do groundwater injection instead of having to pipe water 8 or 9 miles from California Men's Colony, for example, back down to Morro Bay and stick it in the ground there. So my sense is that the there will, everybody that's in this situation will be having to weigh the construction benefits of centralization versus the long-term O&M benefits of decentralization, and that's where we really came down to with Cayugas and why Morro Bay, why we're both doing separate plants 4 miles apart, but both much closer to the reclamation opportunities for each of those plants.
So Dave, kind of teasing this out. So it is what, to me, instinctively, I think three wastewater treatment plants and recycling facilities are more expensive than one larger one, conceptually. Is what's at the core of this control over the recycled water? You know, I want to make sure that my recycled water comes back to my basin or close to my well field. Is that what's the key driver here?
I think that should be easily solvable between two communities. If let's say the existing Morro Bay facility were a water reclamation facility, and we had 1,000 acre or 1 million gallons of water a day of treated water like we do right now, all we would have to simply do is look at the flows: 25% from Cayugas, you get 25% of the recycled water; 75% from Morro Bay, you get that. That issue should not be the driving issue. Frankly, the main issue that caused the divorce was the governance, and very honestly and frankly, we had just started the discussion of governance and thought we were starting a discussion on what it would look like when Cayugas said we're out. But the question, what drove the divorce at that point was governance of the new plant and whether it should be as our existing facility is, which, although sitting in Morro Bay with 75% of the operations and effluent or influent Morro Bay, the existing governance is 50-50 Cayugas and Morro Bay, with essentially Cayugas able to veto anything that Morro Bay wanted to do. And so that was the proximate cause of the divorce, of Morro Bay's starting position of, we think the governance should be somewhat weighted toward who's got the most skin in this game. And we never got to really have a negotiation on that. Does that help?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mike might have a...
Also, if I could add a few...
Could
other,
you state your name, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. I'm Mike Nunley with MKN. I'm the city's program manager for the water reclamation facility project. So a couple of issues too specific to the regional opportunities you described. First, with California Men's Colony, as you recall, we did have some pretty extensive discussions with staff at CDCR, both at the local level and at the state level. One of their concerns was that there were legal constraints with the expansion of that facility to serve users outside of the facility. And their sense was it would take a year plus for them to even answer the legal question as to whether they could serve outside of their current service area. And it had to do with the original financing and funding for the project. So there were significant legal constraints with the California Men's Colony regional partnership. Also, there was as Dave mentioned, the cost issue with that one. On the Cayucas question, the city has documented, I believe, at least two occasions where they sent letters specifically to Cayucas to ask them if they'd like to be a partner again in the facility. And in both cases, the response was, we're happy moving forward with our project and want to move forward on our own. So my sense is the city did make overtures to work with Cayucas formally, and in both cases, Cayucas elected to go their own way.
But by the way, the Man's Colony water treatment facility is designed for 7,000 inmates under the new state regulations on the, which was court ordered on the prison population. The maximum inmates population is now 4,000, and the water treatment facility has excess capacity available without any additional expansion. So that was also one item, that I wanted to share in terms of transparency, that you have a facility there which basically has 30% of underutilized capacity. But again, realize we are where we are. One question that I have for both of you.
If I could, though, just a counterpoint to that. So we went through a pretty extensive process to analyze capacity at the California Men's Colony facility. And so you mentioned the differences, originally for 7,000 inmates, and now they can, but they're only going to have 4,000. Well, Moore Bay has 10,000 citizens. Plus, they have significant peak wet weather flows
and
visitors. So, just on the face of it, doesn't appear there would be enough capacity there. We looked at in the capacity studies that were performed by Carrillo, who had done all the design work and the modeling and the capacity evaluations on past upgrades at the CMC facility, was that the facility would really need to double. So even if they have 30% capacity left, the idea that Moore Bay would be able to be served by that really doesn't seem, based on the work we did, I would assume that there would still need to be construction there. So I'm not sure that there would still be capacity if we compare 3,000 inmates to 10,000 citizens plus visitors.
I was not implying that the whole city of Morro Bay could backfill the 3,000 inmates. My point was there was excess capacity available, and it is also a tertiary treatment plant because they do discharge water in the creek for beneficial habitat. So I have a bit of a different question for both of you, and this relates to now if you have a recycled facility, you have excess capacity of access to state water, and that you could find another interested party, and I think it was 800 acre feet a year?
1,300. Our state water allocation
okay.
is 13.
Better yet. So in this particular scenario, I would assume that this is not water that you would tell the state, here, take it back. It's your water, and so you would have opportunity to negotiate selling that water to other parties. Is that correct?
I'm certainly not an expert in that process. What I do know is that. First, the city would, at least for a period, almost certain. First, I should start and say that there is measurable debate in Morro Bay on whether the city should ever go off of state water, and on what authority it would take to go off of state water, because there was actually a ballot measure a couple of decades ago. That said the city will be on state water. So that's a debate in itself, and I don't want to stand here and suggest that the city manager with council guidance could unilaterally make a decision. There's some things going on behind there that need to be worked through. Second is that at least for a time, I don't think the city would want to give up all its future right to state water.
maybe not speculating, but I'm making an educated executive guess, and I'm being careful to talk about what, you know, I can say on the executive administrative side, and that there's a policy side to this, but that if we were to do this whole phase one and phase two project, the city would at least want to retain our ability to go back on state water if all of the modeling was wrong and if we didn't have a closed loop water system. That said, the desal opportunity is there. But to get to the use all that background to get to your point, yes, the city would be could be in a position to negotiate the lease, maybe that's the word, of our of some or all of our state water allocation to another user in the water conservation district.
Yeah, and I think at one of your hearings, another opportunity is that where you're located, you have a significant amount of avocado farms, and that some of those folks were interested in getting recycled water, because in the last drought, many of those areas, you know, the wells were severely challenged.
That's correct. That's all correct. And our master reclamation plan looked at the entire scope or breadth of reclamation opportunities from purple pipe and water and golf course to ag and lieu exchange to an exchange with one large ag user to IPR groundwater injection. And the cost of the facility for ag in lieu or in, for any ag option was within a couple of million dollars of doing the full recycling. And one of our guiding principles in this has been highest and best use of that water. And we think highest and best use is IPR groundwater injection so that people in Morobe can drink it. If ag were cheaper, measurably cheaper, that would have been perhaps a harder decision. But since I think the ag project was 162 million and the full recycling, no, 165 or 5 or 6, and the full recycling was 167, why in the world wouldn't we want to do a water independence project instead of, and to serve the people of Morro Bay who are paying the rates, as opposed to ag option, which is, I'm certainly not dissing ag options at all where they make sense, but in this case, it makes, if you can get over the price tag of the plan, it makes total sense to do to, for a city of 10,000 on the California coast to reach water independence.
So, let's take a few more questions. I also want to recognize that Dave has to leave at 10:45.
I'm actually good. I can go to 11.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks.
One thing I want to do with while Dave is here is talk about how do we assist, you know, and I'll say both carrot and stick side of the equation, communities in making their decisions. And I'm trying to keep this as a more generalized discussion, not a moral based specific discussion, but you bring local knowledge of one community that's struggling with the choices in front of them. So I also want to kind of migrate to, okay, so what are our actions? What can we do? What do you see, Dave, that we could play a role in? Don't want to discourage Mr. Delgado and others from questions.
I'll just briefly say, and then maybe move to Mr. Delgado, is that I think the region should welcome that. And one of my observations in all hard decisions with the city council over a number of years is the voices at the podium are the loudest voices in the decision. And so what we had 2 weeks ago was a very large group of understandably concerned citizens about water rates. And we were sort of talking the other day, what the voice that wasn't at the podium at the time were other regional agencies, other groups that might look at this from a different perspective, other stakeholder groups, environmental groups or whomever, and
sort of a one-off one. At the end of the day, whoever's standing at this thing and, you know, and is the loudest and closest to the end probably affects, in many cases, affects that board or that council the most. And so partnering, teaming with regional agencies and other regional groups to present to councils or boards the broadest possible picture of the pros and cons of a project or an action is a very worthy objective.
Okay, and you and I have empathy for you because you serve a city council, I serve a board, and I try to figure out strategies to help them in their decision making. And I know one of the strategies that works for me is having dialogue with them in advance of the decision making time. And I would extend that offer to your council,
right,
from me and from our staff, is I think we're in alignment with regards to the highest and best use commitment of that water. And I'm going to say, by and large, discharging it to the ocean is not that,
right,
does not fit that scenario. Recycling much more closely does fit that scenario. And to the extent we can push individual council members to that similar goal, that's on us as the water board. That's in our collective best interest.
Great.
Appreciate that.
Mayor Delgado?
Yes, thank you, David, and Mike for being here. What's the water demand? Is it currently 1,300 or 1,200?
1,150.
Currently it's 1,150. So what's the benefit of discontinuing or reducing the state water supply need? Is it money? Is it the right thing to do?
Both. Plus,
I would say
graciousness towards somebody in the area that might be able to use that. So, so first on, and there is significant debate in the city/community of Morro Bay on every aspect of this question, and so I will provide you what our best professional estimation is, and that is that the city is currently paying about $2,200 an acre feet for state water with a drop buffer. If this plant were boom completed today, we would be producing water for the city at about $1,000 an acre feet, because we still need to run it through the desal plant because of the nitrate contamination. But if you take that $1,200 an acre foot difference and you multiply that by 1,200 acre feet of use a year, and you take that over 30 years, it's about $40 million, which is likely greater than the entire cost of the whole water recycling component. But when it comes down to today's rates, that's a different story, right? So that's the one of the challenges we're in. So part of it is that the other part of it, and part of it is there is a likely a potential measurable financial benefit over the long term, over 30, 40 years of a likely project. And Mike says it's gonna last for 75 years or something like that. Good concrete. The other thing though is the benefit of, sorry, one thing I didn't mention is we anticipate that the cost of state water will not stay at $2,200 an acre feet foot over the next 40 years. Tunnels and dams, no. So our estimation is that $1,200 differential is actually gonna increase perhaps substantially over the next 30 or 40 years. So it mitigates the city's financial risk as well by, and this gets to the next point, by putting us in a position of water independence, because that also mitigates the risk of interruption to the state water supply, earthquake, long maintenance issues, Oroville dams, whatever it is, having a what would essentially be a closed loop drinking water system for a town of 10,000 on the coast is a substantial there's a substantial community benefit to that as well. And then the final piece I sort of alluded to is that if we can do this and somebody can benefit from that 1,300 acre foot allocation, somebody who doesn't have the geology and the opportunity to do what we can do, that's good.
All right. Does your general plan include plans for future residential, commercial, retail growth that might need that state water supply if you were to have this 800 acre feet of usable reclaimed water?
Part of the effort with the facility master planning was to actually put projections to that. So that's included in the analysis that we did, the master reclamation plan and the facility master plan. So yes, that's already been considered.
So you have 1150 current demand. What's your future projected demand?
Future projection demand gets as high as about 1300. So the concept would be the bulk of the supply could be met through extracted groundwater, a combination of the city's existing water rights in the Moro Valley, plus the injected water. And then the increment could be met by possibly seawater desal or the Chora Valley wells. The city's going through a one water plan now, an integrated master planning effort, to look at how they meet that supplemental water supply, how recycled water fits into that picture. So there are a number of options for meeting that last 100 to 200 and also providing some redundancy.
All right. And what's the approximate average persons per household in Morro Bay, and how many connections are you projected to have with your 1,300 acre future projection?
I couldn't give you the number of connections. That really came out of the city's urban water management plan. I could say, you know, in terms of if we look at population, which is always kind of a proxy for that, we're around 10,200, something
yeah,
like that now.
First we have about 5,500 water meters. The population is about 10,500, and I think max build out is in the 12 to 12,500 range, and it will be a long, long time before Morro Bay gets anywhere near that. And that is max. I think there's actually a voter initiative or something that caps population at either 12,000 or 12,500. I can't remember. But 5,500 water meters right now, and perhaps another 10% growth, maybe in the number of residential users.
And how many about average number of persons per household?
Well, no, I think it's in the 3 to 3.5 range.
Okay. So that 167 million, or the if you minus the 34 million or whatever that number was, if you got that first grant, you're dividing it by the 5,500 meter rates now.
So we just completed it. What we did, we contracted out for a rate study. Barlow Wells completed a rate study, and the rate study looked at the whole breadth of rates, but we focused in on a single family residence and the effect on rates of a single family residence.
All right, and it's about 25,000 per household, something in that range.
I don't know. I need to do that math.
Okay.
I can tell you about it on the rate side of it, but not on the cost of project side of it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Next, Dr. Hunter, Ms. Gray After, and Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Buckingham. This is really helpful to hear from you because I live in Los Osos and really aware of the struggles of coastal communities in both dealing with water supply and in understanding where seawater intrusion fits into the water picture. I have a couple questions to continue with the rate increase. Surely, I'm guessing that there is also a visitor component to that, and is there a would the businesses resist a visitor tax that would help to offset the cost to the residents? Because I know Morro Bay is increasingly a destination. I know we have this pause going on with the Highway 1 situation, which could go on for a while, but people are inclined to stay closer to home, but Morro Bay is one of those places. Certainly the Valley connection has been a long tradition of summer visitors who come to the beach. So where does visitor tax potential sit in your financial strategy?
It's a great question, or great idea, and frankly, that's, I think, where some on the city council are right now, are exploring how could we do this whole project now and mitigate the effect on especially lower income ratepayers. And one council member is actively, actually 2 weeks ago, voted against the pause and had the city's gonna, like many of your jurisdictions, gonna get a certain amount of money from is scheduled, is projected to, from PG&E, from the Diablo closure. And this council member said, why don't we take that 100 grand a year and do rate subsidy for lower income weight ratepayers. That your idea is another is another very good one. We have a 10% TOT right now. Each percent on TOT produces about 300 grand. Mm-hmm. So we'll take that back and put it in the ear of some council members in the community. And now, that said, the hotelier community will not be interested in raising TOT. But those are good ideas.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at where we sit between Santa Barbara and Monterey, I can tell you that our hotel rates are highly competitive. And when you think about families visiting the beach and so forth, it just doesn't even measure up to
right.
What it costs to recreate in those areas. So I would think that the hotels could accommodate a reasonable increase in that visitor tax. So that's good to hear. And that was the second part of the question, was how to offset for lower income, because you pointed out about 50% free and reduced lunch means you got a lot of young families
right.
And low income levels. So that would be important to figure out how to offset that cost. The other thing, and I'm glad to hear that in your process you have daylighted the issue of the security of the state water supply and the cost of that state water supply, especially given the Oroville Dam. That's going to come down the line to all water users. So,
if I could just make sure communicating fully. So, there's an argument on one side of Morro Bay that says in 2021 or 2022, when the infrastructure cost of our sort of the debt service cost of our state water goes away, that our state water bill is going to drop significantly.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the voices on the not so excited about this project side, is that function that I talked about, of the differential between state water at $2,200 and our ability to produce at 1,000, there is a school of thought that says once we pay off the infrastructure debt component of our rate, which is scheduled to be paid off in 2022, I believe, that our state water rate will drop down significantly. That might be. There's also a school of thought that says, and it's going to stay right where it is because of the massive maintenance needed on the entire state water system.
Exactly, yeah. And are you, in your agency to agency, kind of information gathering and just working to benefit from all of the different ways the drought is driving the entire state water planning and funding and infrastructure dialogue. Are you connected with DWR and what that state water program looks like? How are you bringing that to your city council?
So the city's a member of the state water contractors group, and then also the city's involved in the integrated regional water management planning efforts. So, you know, city staff, the public works director in particular, is very engaged with you know, both the state and local level with DWR funding and planning and contracting.
Okay, so you've got a pipeline of info. And so my last area that I wanted to talk about is the desal plant. And I know we renewed the permit. I can't remember when, it's been a while, but what does the life of that plant look like? What's its capacity? And you said you have an emergency permit to operate. So what is the typical, especially during the drought, what is the typical operation of that plant production?
It was a great case study to be had here on public policy and saying something's going to work forever and those sort of things. So when the city went on to state water, had an existing desal plan and made a decision to go on to state water, that was a long time ago and none of us were around, but the lore is at that point the city said, we're never going to need this desal plant, and allowed all the permits to expire. So last year, we started to correct that 3 years ago and said that's not very smart. So even though we were using the desal plant for emergency water without a permit from Coastal, we got an emergency permit approved by Coastal last year, and one of the facets of the One Water Plan that I mentioned, and Mike mentioned that we're just starting to work on, is to look at exactly those questions on the potable water side, and what is the usable life of the existing desal plant, and those things. That we actually have in that Morro Valley, in the away from the ocean, we have our Morro Valley wells that are brackish only because of nitrate contamination. They're not brackish because of seawater brackishness. That said, we also have four or five, I think, seawater wells that can pump brackish seawater. They're sand wells. And the desal plant, with some minor conversions on the chemical stuff that's got to be added in afterwards, that plant actually can produce almost the entire city requirement of water. I think it's 1,100 or 1,200 or 1,150 acre feet that the plant has the capacity to do with, I think, $1 million of some minor work.
And I know that plant is tied into discharge through the current wastewater ocean outfall, correct? In fact, the wastewater treatment plant depends on it.
The brine from the existing city desal plant is not discharged to the wastewater plant ocean outfall. It discharges to the outfall that was jointly owned by the Dynegy or PG&E.
Oh, right, yeah.
And so it's a separate discharge right now.
Yeah. And so how far offshore is that?
It discharges in the... which the ocean outfall?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the ocean outfall is half a mile or so offshore.
And can you remind me, was there ever any studies done about the ocean outfall and the potential for tidal circulation to come into Morro Bay?
There have been studies on that in the past, yes, and it's regularly monitored. By the city in accordance with their permit.
And so you haven't seen any impacts to marine habitat, any impacts to marine life? Nothing detected.
As you know, the National Estuary Fund, actually, Morro Bay is a national estuary. We have an office from the National Estuary Foundation or Fund there, and they keep a very close eye on water quality in the bay.
Mm-hmm.
And have not noted any interaction or nexus between the wastewater treatment plant ocean outfall and water quality in the bay.
Or the brine
discharge. Or the brine discharge.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Ms. Gray?
So thank you, Mr. Buckingham and Mr. Hunley and John for organizing all this. I know that you have to go, so I'll be pretty brief, and my colleagues have done a really good job in getting questions answered. Mine particularly were related to subsidization of particularly lower income communities and the offset there. I was also interested in the tax issue, because certainly passing on transient occupancy taxes are a good way of funding. I was curious as to over what time horizon do you anticipate getting that $40 million back related to the differential between your current 2,200 an acre foot and your potential 1,200 acre foot?
That was a 30-year.
30-year time horizon.
Yeah.
And what's the price point of your current desal water?
True desal, ocean water desal?
Well, the emergency prime that you have and the current?
About $1,000 an acre foot because of the nitrate contamination of the Mora Valley wells.
Okay.
And ocean.
Seawater's a little higher.
Yeah,
$1,600.
Okay. And then in terms of your last bullet points for considering the least expensive possible secondary treatment and the considering tertiary treatment, do those, either one of those bullets reach your water security, water independence, water reliability goals at all?
Not at all. Both of those are, so go back, the guidance from the council was essentially, we likely don't have the appetite to do phase two right now. So look at two options, either a tertiary treatment or a secondary treatment, both of which would be complete ocean discharge, tie straight back into the existing ocean outfall. The difference is, as you well know, the tertiary MBR plan would be more easily, more quickly, and less expensively converted to allow for water recycling in the future. And I think that's testing the currents. That's probably where most council members would like to end up, is having a tertiary reclamation ready facility so that at the right time, whether it's in year six or year 10 of the project life, that they could move toward water recycling phase two.
Right. Well, I have some more questions, but you know, by and large, I think this is a wonderful project. It's extremely ambitious, obviously. But anything that we can do to help to dialogue with the community and you know, help for funding, I think would be beneficial.
And Mr. Johnson and then Ms. Cervantes.
Yeah, just real quick. So I didn't quite understand if you. And I understand it's kind of all up in the air what you do past moving the sewage treatment plant itself. But if you do the full Monty of the reverse osmosis recycling, would that be using your existing plant, or would that be building a new plant up at the location of the new wastewater treatment plant?
So really, two plants are involved with that. One plant's involved for the wastewater treatment and to produce, you know, advanced, for the advanced water treatment. And so that would be one facility that would be located at South Bay Boulevard. The existing city desal plant would be used to extract the injected groundwater and the other city groundwater supplies and treat that water. So that, and that's an existing facility. So the city has an existing desal plant that would extract and treat that groundwater.
And if you move it to a new location, then you're subject to the new requirements for the outfall too, I would assume.
Well, we're not proposing to move the desal plant, but when we move the when we build the new wastewater treatment plant and advanced water purification facility, that facility is going to tie into the existing ocean outfall.
So the brine from the In your, assuming you get all the way to doing this, the brine from the recycling plant would go out through the current jointly owned.
That's correct.
Outfall.
Yes.
And is that being blended with something? Is that who else is using the outfall?
Cayuga Sanitary District is a part owner in the outfall, and so their discharge would also blend with the city's discharge.
Okay, so you're probably okay as far as your salinity, as long as they don't start recycling their wastewater too.
Well, our salinity is going to be fairly low compared to the salinity of ocean water, of seawater. because we're treating a wastewater as opposed to a seawater or something like that. So actually the brine we produce is going to be closer in salinity to ocean water, a little closer than what we currently discharge.
So is it going to be more saltier than ocean water or?
Considerably less.
Considerably less salt. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think seawater is what, 30,000, and water treatment plant is like 3,000.
That's after it's, that's the brine from the
yep.
The brine
have,
from the RO plant?
If we have very high recoveries at the RO plant, we could be in the 10,000 parts per million range, somewhere around there, but it wouldn't be 30.
Got it.
So, certainly want to thank all of you for, patiently answer our questions, in out of the box thinking, a little bit along the line of Vice Chair Dr. Hunter, there's this possibility of leveraging the old power plant infrastructure for the purpose of offshore power. Of course, realize this is long-term in the horizon, but when looking at the city source of revenues, there's been a significant loss of revenue from energy. Had the plant before. I forgot what the annual tax roll was, but that was significant.
It was actually a direct payment of $750,000 a year in the last 5 years of plant life. And in the years before that, that was the drawdown sort of payment plan, I believe, 15 years ago when that thing was smoking, literally.
Right.
There was much more significant revenues.
So, I guess also thinking long term, if there was this opportunity of offshore power generation or other means, and I know there's different technologies being considered, this could be also an elegant way of helping offset the cost, long term cost of the plant.
We're moving into the whole separate subject, but just very briefly. So the city's in working cooperation with Trident Winds. Is proposing a 1 gigawatt wind farm 35 nautical miles offshore that would come and tie into the existing California grid at the power plant. Perhaps the most valuable thing about the power plant right now is the connection to the grid.
Exactly. Yeah, because you have the existing transmission line infrastructure and substation.
Right.
And that's the one I was referring to.
Yeah.
I was just using generic terms. Thank you for the clarification. Mr. Robinson, do you have any closing comments?
Well, actually, first of all, I want to thank Dave and the staff for coming. I appreciate that you also have to leave now.
Sure.
Mr. Packard actually did not finish his presentation. We just interjected this.
But we're going to take a break.
Right. And that's fine. I just want to acknowledge that we still have some miles to cover in this item. And then also I wanted to make sure that we talk about options, funding options. Where we can engage collectively on behalf to push municipalities in the right direction. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen. So, it's appropriate to take a break. 15 minutes, Mr. Robertson, or round it to
15.